In this week's episode of the First Moves podcast, we're talking to Hans Heine. In this episode, he shares inspiring and funny stories about his career journey and how he founded the company Soapbox, a company that aims to connect youth, education, and organizations to create impact. Do you want to know how organizations create change? Then listen to this episode.
Hans, welcome to the show. Could you please give a brief overview of yourself and share your career journey thus far?
Yeah, of course. My name is Hans Heinen. So nice to be here on your show. I studied at Maastricht University, bachelor, I don't remember the exact name, so that was in business at least, at the business faculty. And after that, I did a master in strategy and innovation and a track in entrepreneurship. And actually, after my studies, I went on a program for half a year. It was called the Kaufman Foundation Program, and it was for student entrepreneurs. And they invited, I think, around 10 students from the Netherlands to go to this Kaufman Foundation Program. And it was all about learning about entrepreneurship. And the reason why they asked me was because I was in a student team with fellow students from Maastricht University, and we were starting up our own student project, actually. Yeah.
Cool. What was that project?
The aim of the program was you should start a company, and actually the exercise was, okay, you need a problem. And then we were just drinking a beer with five students, and then my grandmother called me and she said, like, Hans, I have a big problem. I cannot enter my house anymore. I said, okay, well, what's going on then? Yeah, because she had difficulties with finding the keyhole. And then so I said, okay, now we have a problem, so we should find a solution. And then we, with the team of students, we developed, it was called Lock8. It was a device to find the keyhole. And actually, it was quite funny because when we started with that project, we figured out that we were only really small in a very large industry of products for elderly people, like wheelchairs, like those grabbing sticks and whatever. So what actually happened was that we were at this wholesaler, and we were so impressed as students to see those huge warehouses. And then we will only be like one of the thousands of products. And then we thought immediately, like, this will not be the big thing, you know? And then we came up with the idea to start a web shop actually for all those kinds of products. So that was called hulpmiddelwereld.nl. That was very important also in the rest of my entrepreneurial career, because we had this web shop for a few months or a year, I don't know exactly anymore. And then we got actually the opportunity to work together with a large company, was called Envida. And they told us, like, hey, we are interested in this web shop. But at that moment we were really small. So it wouldn't have worked if they would immediately would have bought the web shop. So, and then we made an agreement that we got, like, I think it was around 4 years of time to build the web shop, to really make it happen, to get some more revenue. And then we had the obligation to sell the shop at a certain moment, and they had the obligation to buy the shop. So that was a really cool way of doing business, because yeah, then you really have an end goal while you just start your company. So that was quite awesome. And it all started with five students and my grandmother saying, hey, I cannot enter my house anymore. And then you see that the initial idea can, of course, along the way, completely change. That was quite cool. Yeah.
And what goes through your mind when a company like this comes to you and says, we like your webshop at such an early stage?
First of all, that you know that it is interesting what you're doing. You also realize that you could, of course, we could have said, like, no, we don't want to collaborate. But we also saw the added value of like a large organization, because they already had, I think, over 100,000 elderly people who were buying other products. And they saw an opportunity to sell more type of products to those people. So then you also, you can go faster. Of course, you have a smaller percentage because they got immediately a stake in the company. But yeah, you of course can have better or small percentage of something bigger than having it all from something small. Huh? that was the lesson learned.
Yeah. I mean, actually, your learning process from Lockaid all the way to that point was basically just growing your leverage step by step from, we're one out of thousands of products to let's take a stake of this to now we have somebody to work with. And so building that leverage, I think, is what resulted in it ultimately becoming something that you could run for years on end.
Definitely. Yeah. And then we also had a look like, hey, can we do this abroad? But that was quite complicated. I think in general that if people think of a company, then they think it's easy. But even a simple looking web shop was a lot of work, a lot of customer service issues, administration issues, people not paying and ordering things. It was but of course you learn a lot from that. Yeah,
I can relate from running a web shop myself as well.
Okay.
been there as well.
Okay. What were you selling?
Clothes primarily.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, but then with some international reach as well. So dealing with that is a whole mess and shipping times and customer service indeed. So it's relatable. I'm curious though. In your storyline, you essentially studied entrepreneurship before you actually went and did it with Lockaid.
Yeah.
What drew you to it in the first place?
So already on high school, I was always brainstorming together with another student, Luc, who is at the moment also the co-founder of the company we are having right now. And that was more for fun. So we were just brainstorming, hey, what kind of company could we start? And So it was always in my mind. And then when I saw that course, it was a really new course, it was the first year, and I thought, hey, that could be cool, because I really knew I wanted to start a company, but I had no clue in what kind of company actually. And that was for me, a nice opportunity to explore a bit, like, hey, what can we do? And it was also, to be honest, it was that in the Erasmus program, you can say, hey, I want to study, and then you can give a list of the top 10 universities. And then, of course, you put all names like, hey, I want to go to Australia, and I want to do this. But I had not a really good average grade. Yeah. So I ended up that I could go to Liège. and then I decided not to do that. Or Diepenbeek, I don't know exactly anymore. But anyhow, and then I was like, now I have a half year of what am I going to do? And that was also a reason to subscribe for the course, because I already had a other master. Mm. So for me, it was more like, okay, this is a nice thing to try also. So I also didn't finish the entrepreneurship track because I started the company.
Which is pretty hilarious when you think about it.
Yeah. but actually that, I think then maybe that's even better if the entrepreneurship students don't finish the studies, then it worked out probably.
Nice. And how does that journey relate to the company you run now, Soapbox?
So the Soapbox we started because that was also in the end phase. It was about the same time. I don't know exactly what was first, but I had a side job to earn some money at a call center. And then they got a really large project from Q-Park to digitalize all the customers. And actually in the call center, there were only, I think, 10 colleagues, and they needed 90 people a day. It was 30 in the morning, 30, et cetera. So, and then I went to my boss, it was Frank, and I asked Frank, hey, how are you going to get those people? Because you don't have them. And he said, yeah, I will work with ASA student agency. And then I asked him, hey, can you give me the opportunity to recruit students? And then, I can start my own company. So I said, yes, that's fine. But then you only get 3 weeks because, I need to deliver to Q-Park. So I cannot take the risk that you don't have the people. And so in the first week, Luc and I, so I called Luc and my co-founder and said, hey, Luc, okay, come to my house. And I was member of a study or a student association, Circumflex. I don't know if you know it, but and we had a book with all phone numbers. And I really called everyone, like, hey, do you want a job? But then we ended up with, I think, 60 people. But then we also found out, hey, if we need 90 people a day, and especially students, we need over 300 people to fill the schedule. So that was not going to work. And then we thought of, hey, how can we make sure that other students start helping us with finding other students, make it like a viral effect. And what we did then was we did a competition. It was called the coolest student of Maastricht of record. On record, it was actually about who was maybe the most beautiful girl from Maastricht, but okay. Student associations, they liked it because they could win €500 by getting the most votes for their member. And then we had like, I think around 5,000 votes. And everyone who voted, we asked, would you like a side job? And then we had 300 students or over, I don't know the exact number, but way more than we in the end needed. So that was in the same time that we, as with the Logate project, so I don't know exactly anymore, but yeah.
For me, it's pretty funny because you said you learned during your entrepreneurship track, or with the Logate example, you have to fall in love with a problem, or you have to start with a problem, and here you got a problem in your face, and you just said, okay, hey, Luke, let's go do something with it.
Yeah.
So it's the same pattern.
Same pattern. Yeah. Maybe, yeah.
How did the name Soapbox come up?
Yeah, that's actually a really funny story. So in the beginning, it was another guy, it was Billy. So you had Luke, me and Billy. And Billy was really like a guy who came up with also crazy ideas. So when we needed a name for a company, we already did the first election of the hottest student in Maastricht. And then we still didn't have a name because Billy came up with a platform somewhere online, and there you could say, hey, I want to start a company, but we need a name or no logo or whatever. And then companies could say, hey, we want to help you with this project. So Billy made a really professional request, kind of proposal, like, hey, this is what we're looking for. And then Billy came to my house, and so we were behind the computer, and then really, really happened. So the screen turned on. And there were like six guys in suits in Manhattan. And we were like in my student room, with the beer boxes all around us, and it was really messy. And they were laughing like hell. They were like, oh my God, we really thought this was a really big project. And we were laughing because we thought we would have like a person sitting somewhere who came up with a name. Yeah. So there was a complete mismatch in expectations, what Billy did a good job, I would say. And then they said, like, within the first minute, it was like, I don't know, it was the director. And he said, like, okay, guys, it's obvious we are not going to do business together, but okay, we did a lot of work already for you to get this pitch. So what we will do, we give the pitch. We will send you the presentation. You can have it for free. We are not going to charge you because the amount we would normally charge is, so just keep it. But if you ever go to the States, if it ever is a really big success, then reach out to us again. That would be nice. And they came with the name Soapbox. Why? Because they actually said, like, what you did with this election, you literally put a student on a stage, on a virtual stage, so they could present themselves. And then they said, that's what is going on in Speaker's Corner in London. People took in the past probably their soap box, and they went to this park and used the soap box as their stage. So the soap box symbolizes the stage where students and organizations meet up. So we offer students a stage to present themselves, actually. So that's, but it was really funny that they did all the work for us. We didn't came up with a name or cell and a logo and everything.
That's hilarious. Yeah. I think there's so many stories of people that we know and ourselves thinking like for days, name, and then that you end up on a call with six dudes in Manhattan.
Yeah, just a lucky shot. Yeah.
It's hilarious. Yeah. Oh, that's cool. Could you maybe just clarify then with that analogy and metaphor of the soapbox in maybe two or three sentences for the listeners, what soapbox actually does to achieve this?
Yeah. So Soapbox is the only company I'm active right now. And what our mission is to connect students, educational institutions, and organizations to make societal impact. And that's a really broad, of course, societal impact because that's everything. But we have a focus on stimulating entrepreneurship. So for example, with the Maastricht University Challenge or Brighton Startup League challenge, I have to say, it's really about starting your company. So that's one way of impact. But we also do a lot of company challenges. So a company can say, hey, we have this issue and how can students help us? And there we focus mainly on the sustainable development goals. So we try to stimulate organizations to say, hey, if you want to make an impact on the SDGs, connect with students and they start brainstorming for you. They come up with innovative ideas to increase this impact. And a new one we are launching or launched recently is that we also want to try to give students a really good career start. And that's more than on showing on the one hand students which companies there are in the region, but on the other hand also showing students to organizations, say, hey, okay, we have this great student, we know you are not looking right now maybe for this, you don't have a really a job offer right now, but why not? If this is a really good person, then I would almost say create a job. So what we did is we asked students to create a top 10 of where would you love to work. And then we reach out to those organizations and we say, okay, we have here Sebastian and he is an amazing student, of course. And then how can, and out of all the companies in Europe, you are in his top 10. So if you don't have a job for him, create a job for him. That's the logic that we have in our mind. But if it really will work, we will figure out. And it's not easy, but we will try. Yeah.
So a very important part to how to get this to work is collaboration between different parties with you guys. So what's the biggest challenge that you guys have in aligning goals of such diverse stakeholders? Because there's a lot of stakeholders involved in this.
Good question also. So the model that we have with the university challenges is that first the educational institution has to say, hey, we want this project, of course. So that's step one. And often, so we started with TU Eindhoven, TU Technical University. And the first thing they told us was, hey, we don't have time and we don't have money for this. So if you want to collaborate, that's fine, but we don't have money and we don't have time. So, and then actually our reaction was, okay, we still want to collaborate. and then we thought of a model that actually it's free for students to join a competition and organizations can support the project actually. And we were able, it was a lot of work to reach out to all kind of organizations and ask them, hey, do you want to become a partner of this challenge? And then it of course helps that you work together with the university. So universities or education institutions are really important to us. But of course you need to deliver added value for the partners as well. And that's also difficult because of course in a university challenge, it's mainly for the students. So on a high level in the organization that they really see the value of building an ecosystem together. And so that are also more the larger organizations like the Medtronic or the Brightlands campuses that really see that added value of doing this not in a, okay, then tomorrow we have this, but they really think a little bit more strategic, I would say. And that's what you need to set up these kind of projects. Yeah.
And then if I can ask, that value creation, like you said, it's very much long-term driven. Mm-hmm. But then how do you actually capture and monetize something like this? Yeah. These partners pay for it. Yeah. What kind of systems are in the back of that?
So what actually happened was that at one moment, so you do like evaluations like you in general do, and I always hate them because even if everything went well, people, because they are used to it, they always say, but I also need to have something negative. Okay, but anyhow, but one really good remark was from the national police, and they said like, hey, in your concept, it's like this, that students come up with a good idea. And we are looking like, hey, is there anything in there for us? But wouldn't it also work if we do it the other way around? So we have a problem and then students can work on this problem. And that was the beginning of the company challenges. And that was a way to increase the added value for the partners to participate. Because that was really new, because then the students are really focusing on the issue that the police had. And by doing that, of course, the relevance for police goes up. That's logic. And So that's one way. And of course, yeah, it's also up to the company to make the most of it in that sense that if you go to an event and you speak to students and you say, hey, add me on LinkedIn and hey, I will call you in a few weeks. Maybe we can have a drink together to see whether you want to work at our organization. Of course, you need also proactivity within organizations. So it's always a mix. And I don't want to say that, and I hope also that companies are not only in there what's in it for us. And a really nice example is ASML. They are partners since the first year that we started, first edition, and they are still like 10 years later, still our premium partner. And in the interview one time, they said like, we don't want anything back. What we want is that students can have this amazing experience that we have in the Eindhoven region. We have a really like innovation that we also have other companies who join in, and we want to pay more so that other companies can pay less, but that they can join in because we need to, and that's the energy that you see in the Brainport region that made also the region so successful. And I think that if, for example, also in Limburg, we really need this kind of thinking to
yes.
increase impact here. Yeah. Yeah. And boost innovation and entrepreneurship. So, yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Now, actually, at a glance, Soapbox looks like a really unique proposition. Essentially, it's long-term ecosystem building and giving people opportunities. But are there any competitors out there? And you don't need to name them, but I'm just curious, what would also make you different from them?
Of course, there is competition on several levels. There are also initiatives that students do or universities themselves. But we often, or most of the time, we collaborate with them. So we don't try to, because what we are doing is like to do something good. So why don't join in and make it fun and participate? So that's on one side. Then there is a other company, it's called StartHubs, and what they do actually is that companies can say, we have this project, for example, the Dutch Railway, and then they can say like, hey, I have this challenge, but then it are really startups and they have to send in their solution, and you can get a really a big project of I don't know how much money. So, but that's more focusing on the next step. So we are more on the students, and what we often hear, even from incubators, from investors, is, yeah, you're really, really early stage. And actually that's true. And that makes it difficult on the one hand, but that's also a reason why this target group is not that interesting sometimes. So I think that's also a reason why there's not that much competition. Of course, if we have a look at the matchmaking of students, that's something that's of course not unique at all. And then there is amazing competition. So we are more into looking for, hey, can we maybe collaborate on that point than setting this up ourselves? But we want to just try to see how far we get. Yeah.
And then what about the key challenges that you faced with these collaborations? Because I can imagine it's not all sunshine and rainbows.
Oh.
So what kind of things do you run into?
The challenge that you have is that of course, it is always possible. Education institute will always think, well, hey, what are we going to do? Do we collaborate with Soapbox or not? Are we going to do this ourselves? And you have to deliver, because else you have problems. So that's a challenge. But now we look a little bit different to that. So we had a university in Eindhoven. We worked together 10 years and then they decided, hey, we want to do this more on our own. But we did that in a really nice way, because still we really believe in, of course, our own product. So, and I also saw that Eindhoven was kind of ready for it, to do it themselves, because they did it for 10 years and they had a whole team of professionals working. So yeah, we decided, okay, that's a possibility to do it yourself, and we did it. But then also we make sure that the partners can still participate. So also with ASML, we arranged that works really well for them. So, but what I see is that, so in our model, We bring a lot to the university because we bring a website, we bring people, we bring, we do the recruitment of students. Yeah, and the investment is relatively not so high, let's say like that. And so by doing it all yourself is of course more expensive in the end. And yeah, so why would they stop? You know, that's the question. And that's, so the model is, I think, very interesting that we offer to educational institutes to work with us because we take all the risk. We come with a whole partner network, so we make we make it happen. So, and we do all the, I think, maybe very, we do all the shitty work. Yeah, going after students, make sure they hand in all their things, recruit them, etc. And that's often overlooked. So if you're at a final event, it sometimes maybe looks easy, but there is a lot of work to that it all goes in a smooth way. And that's something that we also had a client in the past that stopped the collaboration, and within a year he came back. With this reason, like, we didn't know it was so much shitty work. So yeah, within our organization, there's no one who wants to do this.
Fair. Yeah. I think also there's a really nice lesson in what you said about the collaboration with Eindhoven and the way you handled that. Because from my experience, if a key principle that underlies your organization is collaboration and creating these win-wins, when those win-wins are becoming less of a win-win because they've built up their own capability, to then be all harsh about it and keep either, you know, exploiting it, or to be to come at it with an angle of conflict and say, no, screw you guys, like, why are you leaving us? But rather setting it up so that ASML, for example, could still work with it.
Yeah.
I think having that very principled approach, I think, is really, at least for me, it's been really important in my projects that I've done, because it keeps this authenticity and it keeps the organization also aligned with what it stands for. I don't know, that really resonated with me as well, and a way to keep tackling those issues effectively, right?
Yeah.
Maybe switching more inwards then towards the organization, if there are these crappy tasks that need to be done, kind of what are the key leadership principles that you've kind of found that work for you for managing a team of, I think, almost 50 people to do this kind of work?
Yeah, so I think from the beginning on, we are a kind of small company. And it's all about, for me, very important, about trust. So open communication, if there's something going on, if you make a mistake, don't worry. I mean, it's, but as long as you tell it, and we can fix it together. So trust is really important in this whole process. We have a few principles, like, deliver wow, what is wow? So if you organize an event, try to think of things that are really impressive for students or for a jury member. How can you impress them? So that's something we do. And a kind of leadership. So actually recently, since 1st of January, we have a more operational director to make sure that we become more professional in the organizational part. And I think that's very important, because Luc and I are not probably the best managers. So we get more energy also of starting new projects, being out there, talking with organizations, with educational institutes. That's what sometimes you feel like, hey, when I'm doing these tasks in a day, you feel a kind of energy. Yeah, and I think that's very important. While Robin, our new colleague, she is really about, okay, I want to have that everything is fixed in a perfect way, and that's very valuable. And I think the mistake that Luc and I made was that we did this too late. So that's maybe also good. If you really are an entrepreneur, find at least someone, and probably in the beginning already, that is really good in operational task and really also likes to do this. And
so a lot of companies, they want to work with the youth to kind of increase their marketing aspect of things. Do you experience this as well, or do people that you work together with really use this within the organization and more than just as a marketing
gimmick? You mean like greenwashing? No, I think of course there are some projects that you do, and in the end you think, why did they participate? But no, I believe that the majority is really in there because they see and they get positively surprised by the the greatness of the ideas that students have. And we do in these company challenges every time again when I go there and with my car, I'm kind of, I don't want to say I'm nervous, but there is some kind of tension that you think like, I hope today they come up with something good, because you never know. Huh? And then what I most of the time do is I give a short call to the one who is doing the hosting of the day, and I ask, hey, how is it going? And yeah, then I also, yeah, it's going well. Okay. And then when you somehow then the students get the presentation, and yeah, 9 out of 10, or maybe even 99 out of 100, the company is positively surprised by what students can do, for example, in one sprint day, and that they give a presentation, and then they're like, oh my God, how is this possible? If we see what the students do in one day and how long it would take us to come up with this. And especially then when students use AI and toolings, and then there is this amazing presentation. And then we had it one time at the Energy Transition Conference in Amsterdam. There was like, I don't know exactly what his role was, but we were quite high in the organization, and he just came in for the presentation part. And then the students, they had a one day about energy transition, and they had a presentation. They used AI to show how this could look like. And yeah, and this guy, he just couldn't believe that there wasn't like a whole design team who created this. And then what you see is that this makes such a shift in the mindset, also about how this person then looks to his or her internal organization. Like, oh my God, why are we doing this in this way? And your students do it way smarter. And I think that's a cool thing with AI, that is happening like now in a really fast pace, and companies can't keep up with speed. And yeah, but that's always what I think the really new innovations. And yeah.
Is there one project that really comes up to the top of the head when you're like, that idea that they presented there was just wow?
Oh yeah. There was one time was a sprint day, so at the police, and there was a really difficult challenge. So the challenge was, how can you get information out of a house or a building within entering? But in a case, so imagine there is a criminal inside or not, and you are there with a whole team of police persons, and you're thinking, how do we enter the building? And then it's quite nice to know if there is a person inside or not. And that could be important information. But of course, this person will do everything to not let you know. So it's dark, there's no heat on, and he tapes everything. So you cannot enter in any way. So in the morning, it was like the students came up with all kinds of suggestions. We go through the toilet. No, because that's not a good solution. It can. Because, for example, if this criminal is smart, he will make sure that is covered. Or we go by the air things and whatever. So the whole morning it was no, 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 and we already tried. Yeah, that was the whole lot. So I was there like, And then we were at lunch, and there was like one student, and he said like, is this really only about knowing if there's someone inside? And it was a really quiet guy, you know? So yeah, but that's easy. So okay, wait till after the break, and then we will, yeah, you can tell the others. No. And then he said like, hey, I have an idea. So what I want to do is we are going to use Wi-Fi, because it sends out a signal and it gets back a signal. And if there is someone walking or moving, then the signal gets disturbed. So then police, there was also one guy said, yeah, but we tried this, but yeah, say, when did you try this? Yeah, and then it was like a long time ago, and said, yeah, okay, but Wi-Fi is those receivers are getting better. And that ended up really in a whole team of police who developed this technology. And now they are so far that they can even measure the heartbeat from outside. So because even this movement of your heart is measurable with Wi-Fi. Yeah, and that's really cool. So then now they know how many people are in there. Are they maybe sleeping? Because their heartbeat is low. And that's really something, by that one comment of the student, that's made this whole project work. So, and that's really cool to see that. And it can be sometimes really easy, because yeah, it's not something that didn't exist, but it just that he thought of it at that moment. So yeah,
that's one of those things where there's no dumb ideas to be thrown around. That's
no, and that's also within the university challenges. I mean, of course, there are also many ideas that will never work, but there is always that one or two that will. And yeah, that's always difficult, of course, to know exactly. But I think most important maybe is the team, more important than the idea in some cases, because, yeah, it's also about execution of the idea.
Talking about the team, how did you build the initial team for Soapbox? You had your co-founder?
Yeah, so I started with Luc and Billy in the beginning. Billy was one of the guys also who was in the Locate project. Luc because I knew him and we always wanted to, and Billy because he was the only one that was, okay, now I know why we had Billy, because when you needed to form a group of students, and I didn't know Billy, but then there was like, you needed to make a team of five within like 10 minutes. It was like, there was not a, and then Billy, everyone had to introduce him or herself really shortly. And Billy mentioned something about, I can build a website or something like that. And I thought, okay, he was the only one. And I always thought maybe something with a website. So I went, Billy, he was okay with that. So Billy was the guy who, and in the end, it turned out he couldn't build a website at all. But he just mentioned it to increase its value within the team. So.
Oh my days. But he's the guy in the end who got the Soapbox name, right?
Yeah. 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 It was the same thing.
Still done. So he knew how to write something on a website.
Definitely. Yeah. And what is, of course, on the one hand, a pity, but also logic that you are in a team of five, but then in the end, we only continued. I only continue because the other ones all got really nice job offers. So one went, Darius went to Zalando, Robert went to BMW. We had another guy. And Billy was on board for some time, but then, of course, you're not earning a lot of money in the beginning. So then it also gets a little bit complicated. And then you get a nice offer, and he was really a cyclist, and then he got an offer, like a job to set up a cyclist brand in the Netherlands. And I said, that's really cool. So that's, I think, a pity in the end, of course, but also logic that this team falls on. Yeah, and how did I find, so Luc, I knew, and then for the web shop, there was another guy, also by coincidence, my mother told me that she knew someone who was looking for a job or something like that, and then that was Rob, and then we asked Rob to join in, and yeah, so it's a little bit about also, yeah, coincidence, I think.
Yeah, it's a bit of luck, but also knowing via kind of things to get people on the team, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, as a student, you know a lot of people. So if you ask around from who would like to join our podcast, and probably you will find someone. No?
Yeah. I mean, we definitely have already.
Yes.
And I mean, if you don't know a lot of people, you can easily find them as well.
Yeah.
But I think also like a big point for having a good team is just the ability to pivot. Your idea can be horrible, but if you improve it and change it fast enough, as probably with Lockade, then going from, no, this is not the point of leverage, no, that's not it, and then actually finding it.
Yeah, you see that a lot with the good student teams, that's what they do. And they come up with something, then they go to industry, and then an industry expert tells them something, and then they adapt, and then that's a way to make it work often. Yeah, that's, I don't see many student startups with the initial idea 5 years later. Most of the time, they found a better way to. And I think there that the concept of having industry experts in a jury is quite interesting, because we often get the question, why are there not only entrepreneurs in the jury, because of entrepreneurship competition. Yeah, that's of course valuable, we also want that more, but on the other hand, if you are in a certain industry and you hear about a new idea and that could work in your industry, you can be also very valuable for the students. So there was one time with Medtronic, there was a student in Eindhoven who had an idea about, he was a sports guy, so he was in the fitness the whole week. And then he developed an app for how much water do I need to drink while doing exercises. And Medtronic saw this and said, like, hey, interesting for fitness, but also very interesting for people who are taking medicine. So then you see that an idea can also, and then you say, oh, maybe there's a more interesting industry for than fitness. So that can also happen.
Yeah, I think the entrepreneur could also say if they're unfamiliar with the industry, just test it, adapt and pivot.
Yeah.
But then the industry expert is exactly doing that. They're testing in with their previous knowledge and then allowing for a pivot already.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think, and especially with large organizations like the police, that they are so big. So if you come up with an idea about IT or you come up with an idea about food or whatever, it doesn't matter. It's always interesting for them because they are such a large organization. It can always work in a certain way for them. So that's why those large organizations also really like to join in. They look at the ideas with a different mindset, like, hey, how can we integrate this maybe? Yeah.
So Hans, Soapbox now has been live for, I think, 16 years, somewhere around there. And it being focused on this kind of long-term value creation. Mm-hmm. What's the thing that you've probably been most proud of in terms of an achievement for that company, looking back on that 16-year journey?
What I really like then is, so for example, there are, I think, a few things. So what I realized is that the first winner of the ASML Makers Award in Eindhoven today is still working at ASML. So that's something that you really think, wow, that's cool, because probably by the competition, he won the ASML Makers Award. Now he is not working on his initial idea, but now he is very valuable for ASML. So that's something I really think is cool to see. But also that was with Code Sandbox. That was a startup from, I think it was Twente University. And what we always try is not only to have the student teams that already exist, but also students that are walking around on campus and probably will not start or maybe have an idea but don't do anything with it. And that was the case with Code Sandbox. So Luc was recruiting students on campus, and he just walked into the Mensa and there were two guys, and Luc asked them, hey, do you have an idea? Not really, but don't you have a nice project? Yeah, I'm working on something. So what is it? And they told something like, yeah, we are programming so that other programmers can code more easy, something like that. Luc had no idea. Luc always just wants, of course, we want as many participants as possible. So Luc said, that's an amazing idea. Join, come to the kickoff event and let's see. And yeah, that turned out in the end that they, I don't know exactly, but they have a huge investment. So that's an example of that a great startup. A last example, maybe with the SDG challenge, that a company like NXP is now really saying, hey, we are going to make a switch in the way we did. They were making a new building and they asked students, how can we create something in this building so that people get more aware of the SDGs and how we as NXP should contribute? And the students came up with something that's now really in the phase that NXP is looking like, hey, how can we really implement this? So yeah, then you have all the drivers. So it's about talent, it's about entrepreneurship, and it's about innovation and making social impact. So yeah, that's quite cool to see those kind of things. And
having had the experience with all the university challenge and seeing a lot of student startups and some of them making it, some of them don't, what is your key advice that you have to some of these young people that are trying to start their own companies as students?
First of all, just try it, because I think that's the most important thing. Just try out. Can something help? I think in the end it is better to start not alone, but with someone. A whole team is difficult because there is no money in the beginning. And which company can pay salaries for 10 people in the beginning? I mean, that's really difficult. So I would say, like, start with two or three maximum, and then in the end you can of course make the team bigger. And I would say always, if I could start over again, you should think about like your revenue model, for example, like can you create something so that there is recurring income? You see that with insurance companies. A friend of mine has one. That's the easiest business you can be in. I don't hope Thomas will listen to this podcast. He will recognize himself probably. But so the model, and in the end, I think very important, maybe most important, look for an industry or something that you really are passionate about, because you will spend so much time. And then if you're doing something you don't like, then it's... And I think that combination of things, and of course you can have a look at it, something scalable, keep it easy and all that kind of stuff, but maybe it's not always the most important thing to have the most scalable product. I mean, if you are enjoying yourself and having a nice income, whatever, it can also be okay. But if you can, of course, start with a blank sheet that I would make as founders, I would create a checklist so that you say, okay, what are most important things? So, okay, imagine scalability, social impact, recurring revenue. So you can make like a top 5 or top 10 of, and then just come up with ideas and put it along the checklist and see if it isn't fitting, then you don't start. Come up with something better, drink more beer, and then come up with a more creative solution. Because I think that's the unique chance when you start, that you have every opportunity. So you should be critical in the beginning. What is important for us in the more long run? And then if you think about that, I think maybe you can start already with a better idea, and that can save you a lot of time later on. So that maybe, yeah.
Very nice. I think with in mind that, I mean, your career so far just seems to be focused on fulfilling and creating space for potential to create impactful innovation and mm-hmm. impactful ideas. How do you keep that in mind going forward?
Ooh, yeah, I mean, now what we are doing at Sobox now is that, for example, with the SDG challenge, what we try now is to find people in other countries that maybe want to start the SDG challenge in their own country. And by doing that, we give the opportunity to students there to also experience this. And then Sobox more has a role of being we have the online tooling, and we have, of course, the formats. So that's a way to try to increase the impact.
Yeah. Awesome. And then to wrap up, we ask all our guests to bring an object of personal significance. What did you bring today?
I know you asked it, but to be honest, I didn't take something like my tennis racket, although I love tennis. But so I always have this bag with me with my laptop in there. But there is also a short, letter of my grandmother, just who once sent me like, hey, can you bring some groceries and something like that? So that's always in my bag. So when she came up with the problem for the log 8, so probably maybe I brought something. I would say this piece of paper for my grandmother. That's something nice. She's still alive. She's 96. Whoa. So she can listen to your podcast.
Oh, nice. Can I ask why you carry it around still?
Yeah, I mean, it's valuable for me. So it's like, yeah, something nice. So, yeah.
Cool. All right. Hans, thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Cheers.
Top.
All righty. Thank you very much for listening to that episode of First Moves. If you want to connect with our guests personally, make sure to follow us on LinkedIn at First Moves. We also have an Instagram called First Moves Podcast. And lastly, if you could take a moment to leave a review, it helps us make the show better for you, but also helps us get even better and more insightful guests over the long run. Thank you very much, and have a great day.